Everybody, today's episode is brought to you by ASAT Camo, all season, all terrain. Our co-host Joe works with ASAT. We got to know him a little bit, and we absolutely love their cattle camo pattern. I've been wearing ASAT pattern for a long time as well, and I have all the confidence in the world with it. So if you want to learn more about it, visit ASATCamo.com. Our next sponsor for This Is Hot Boga is Stokeri Stabilizers. Stokeri Stabilizers are made 100% here in America, so you know they're well-built. Check out their website at www.stokeri.com. Our next sponsor is Black Eagle Arrows. James and I have made the switch to traditional archery, and we wanted an arrow that could give us the highest quality shooting that we could get. It's beautiful. Check them out, BlackEagles.com. Just going to take a minute to say thanks to an outstanding sponsor of ours, Strika Optics. They have the best warranty also. If you ever drop your product, get it dirty, send it into them, they'll replace it, clean it, and get it back to you. We've also been taking pictures with the optics and hashtagging them with Strika Saturday. So check them out on our Instagram page, and also check out their products at StrikaStrong.com. Next, we are brought to you by Seek Outside. Seek Outside has some of the best tents, stoves, camping gear you could ever ask for. We look forward to using them on some of our upcoming hunting trips out west, along with some of their packs. Check them out, Seek Outside. Next up, New Breed Archery. We just hooked up with them, ordered a few RK1 sneakers, dipped in ASAT camo, which are absolutely beautiful. One of the good things that they offer are direct sales to customers, so custom-made bows for everybody. Check them out, newbreedarchery.com. And finally, today, our last sponsor is Northern Broadheads, all the way from Australia. They provide some of the extremely high-quality broadheads, and our buddy Adam is down there doing an awesome job, so thank you. Check them out, northernbroadheads.com.
I'm a little bit shorter stature, so I, you know, have to play around what I do. But, you know, we make a couple of short bows as well, and they work out good. And, in fact, the little Tyrant, that bow is a turkey hunter's dream if they hunt with a bow at all with turkeys, you know. So it's a 30-inch axle, but it's just built, just has that feel. But one thing about a longer axle, when you start getting into it, you're definitely going to notice your string angles. You'll notice that you come to your anchor point a little bit more comfortable. You're not having to hunt for a peep sight. It just sort of becomes natural, especially at your draw length. You're a little bit longer draw length than that standard 29-inch, which is about average in the industry right now. That's good.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's a huge benefit, especially when you start punching arrows out there to 100 yards. Because I know on, like, my Realm, for example, 30-inch axle-to-axle bow, I actually have to slightly change my anchor point. I have to push it down real hard to get it, you know, get everything locked in because of the change in the sight. The sight bracket drops all the way down, and to get that peep alignment and keep everything square and right in line, I gotta move my anchor point a little bit.
Yep,
I don't think I'll have to. I don't have to do that. I won't have to do that with a little bit longer axle to axle, I don't believe.
No, you won't. You'll notice that it'll be a more natural feel at full draw. On the longer shots, for sure, you know. At zero to 20 to 25, I mean, you know, I jokingly say it, but you can just about do it with a slingshot nowadays, some of them that they make. So, you know, but when you really want to start getting into what feels right for you. And that's one reason we make the different bows, though. I get asked all the time, which, you know, that's the number one question I get asked is, you know, which bow would you shoot, or what do you shoot? And, you know, being in my position, I shoot them all. I've designed them all. But, you know, I have different bows for different situations. I know that is definitely not the case for everybody. I get a little, you know, where I can do that because I'm always testing something. But we definitely label the ETX the do-all bow because I truly believe you can hunt anything with it, and then you can go straight into shooting indoor or 3D tournaments and feel very comfortable. I even got some folks overseas that are using that as a field bow, you know, so they're shooting 90 meters or longer with it, and they use that bow right there. So I honestly, that bow is the do-all bow. I think 35 inches, a pretty sweet setup. I came out with, I had a boat called the Eclipse back in 2011. And
I've read about it.
Yeah, and so this is all the little things I would, you know, if I had the technology at the time, this is all the little things I would have done to the Eclipse. So pretty excited about that.
Yeah,
I am too. I can't wait to get my hands on it. I mean, this might actually be a good segue right here, but I was talking to the Boga guys today, to them a little bit, and we had asked that are going to be shooting the new breeds this year. We're all in. I'm ordering the ETX. I'm going to be shooting it this fall. I'm hoping to get it here in the next couple weeks, get it set up, and Kyle's going to be putting ASAT on it, on the riser and the limbs, and then we're going to match the bowstring, and I can't wait. I'm really excited.
Oh, yeah, for sure, and that's one thing that we're getting pretty excited about here at New Breed is I founded the company based off of where I'm headed today, and that's been over 10 years ago now, but I founded the company off of customer service and being able to get what you want, and you know, I think it's really neat that we're able to offer the ASAT camera. I mean, that we've had people in the past ask for it, and luckily you guys had some film already being made, and so it's pretty easy to get that connected. And we did a couple of custom rigs out there, but now it's going to be one of our front runners that we put on our website as, you know, available to the, you don't have to call for it anymore. Basically, if you see it there, you can order it in it. So you know, instead of having to hunt me down, you'll know that we do it already, you know.
So it'll be an option then for the users to come, and they can create their bow with this pattern on there then?
Yep. And awesome. You know, one of the cool things that New Breed's doing, and of course obviously we're gonna get into that a little bit, but we're actually gonna be consumer direct, you know, and we originally, like I said, I founded the company that way and quickly went to the dealer networks. And there's nothing wrong with the dealer networks. It's just for us to be able to do the one-on-one connection with the people who shoot our bow, and for us to be able to do some of these cool custom options like the ASAT camo, we just feel this is the right move for us to be able to offer those options. And why not just talk to us direct? And I think the world's caught up a little bit.
Yeah.
10 years ago, it was a little hard to make that sale because everybody was like, man, I've never shot it. I don't know what's going on. I don't know you.
Right.
The good part is our brand has grown a good bit. And the other side of that is if you can buy a house or a car off the internet and never go look at it,
right,
you definitely can buy a boat. And so we're pretty excited about that.
I never thought I'd see, you know, I mean, there's a lot of things I never thought I'd see come in my lifetime, and I've already seen them. I think it's a natural progression here.
Well, especially when you get so far into custom stuff. I mean, and it feels like, Kyle, that's kind of where you're pushing your company. I mean, built for the person that's going to be shooting the bow. I mean, we just got one in for Jared here that you guys put together in ASAT camo.
It is an awesome.
That RK1 is amazing. But, you know, it fits with what people want, which is their own thing, a way to express themselves with their bow. They can pick camo and, you know, string color and everything else, and that's just a good idea.
Yeah, we're on fire about it, and our website will be updating very quickly to go to that. And I'm going to say this, we've had some really good dealers out there, and those guys have been good to us, and there's a handful of them that I've made really good friends with, and so we are going to have demo centers.
Okay.
They won't be on every corner, but some of our good dealers we're going to convert to demo centers so that the bows can be there, and you can, you know, if you're in that local area, you can run by and try one out and then place your order right there online. So our website's getting there. We'll be able to let you pick out string colors, riser color, limb color, any other little thing that you may want to do. So that's the cool part about that, is it'll let you customize. And you know, if you got to try it, we're actually going to have a demo program where we're going to do basically if you call in, you can fill out form and call in, we'll hold a credit card, very similar to like holding a credit card for a hotel room.
Sure.
We'll ship you out a demo bow and let you try it, and you ship it back and order what you want. One of the cool things that we're going to do is if you're 90% on the fence, you've heard good things about New Breed, but you've never had one, you're unsure, we're actually going to offer, this is how much we believe in our product, but we're going to offer a 15-day money-back guarantee. So
if
you get that bow and you get it in and you draw it back and it's like, man, this is not what I thought it was, or are you something different, we're definitely going to do it. Now, obviously, color choices are going to be, you're going to have to be locked in on that. But as far as, you know, if there's something you don't like about the bow, I mean, what other company is going to give you 15 days to send it back to them?
Yeah, that's sweet.
So you're telling me if I was a compound shooter and I'm looking into going into traditional, I can choose out the RK1, sign all the paperwork, you guys put a hold on the credit card or debit card or however you do that.
Yep.
You ship me an RK1. I test it out for how long?
You got 15 days.
I get 15 days to shoot it and feel it out, and then if I like it, can I purchase it?
Probably on the RK1, it will depend, but probably on those, yes, you can.
Cool. Okay.
It'll probably be a generic black one. Most of our demos will probably be black because,
sure,
you know, I'm not going to try to send out all the different colors. If a guy wants to see a color, or a lady, if they want to see a color, they definitely could jump on the website. We're going to have a lot of lifestyle photos, hopefully, and then we'll have good pictures of our risers.
Yeah, and that helps out a lot, too. So,
yeah.
Actually seeing it someplace where you can customize it. I'm a big believer of the customization.
Yeah.
You know, even with certain shoes, you can just,
as crazy as it is, I am too. And I had gotten a little away from that with the company. We'd gotten to where, okay, we're going to offer, you know, this, and if some guy calls in and he luckily enough remembers that Kyle did that kind of stuff, then yeah, we'll do it. But I sort of lost that connection a little bit. And that's, so at the end of the day, customization, the first thing that customize starts with is customer to me. So, you know, that's what I want it to be about. I want it to be an experience that at the end of the day, somebody comes off and they've just got a smile on their face. I mean, think about it. When you go and almost anything you can purchase today, from computers to cars to some of your bigger purchases, and I consider a bow a big purchase nowadays for sure. You want it to be yours. And so this is definitely an expression of that. And, you know, there's custom rifle companies out there. And if you talk to the guys that buy the custom rifles, those are the same guys that are going to, same type of guys or gals that are going to buy a custom bow. You know, they've already been through, you know, did they like archery or not? It's a lifestyle for them at this point. And so that's who we want to cater to. We want to just entrench them and let them know, hey, we're in that lifestyle too. And, you know, we're here to help you out. So I'm excited about it.
Yeah, that's awesome. Exciting. And actually, we've gone so far down the road. I want to go back and actually introduce you, Kyle. So for everybody listening, this is Kyle Null. He's the president of New Breed Archery. Kyle, I guess the first thing that I want to know about you is, when did you get started doing this? You mentioned 10 years ago you started. Is that when you first got into archery, or was that well before the start of New Breed?
Oh, no. I started archery at a very, very young age. Pretty fortunate. I'm from Alabama. I still live in Alabama today. I've moved around a little bit, but I'm back home in my home state. And so I've been very fortunate. I grew up on a farm, and my dad was pretty already, you know, we were already hunting. We had a dairy farm when I was very small. And just by the time I got old enough to really get into hunting, we had switched to a crop farm. So soybeans and wheat. And so deer hunting was pretty natural at that point. And my dad saw that I had a passion for archery. And so with that, he got me started very young. So I started shooting. I probably really started shooting a bow seriously at age 12.
Okay.
I had one before that. I think my dad got me an old Bear bow. I had a recurve, probably just playing around with when I was younger than that. But by the time I was 8, he had gotten me a compound to mess around with. And then by the time I got 12, I was pretty serious. And so it got fun. And I killed my first deer with a bow. I killed one with a gun already. But my first bow kill, I did at 14. And so that was pretty exciting. And I was hooked at that point. I was all in. And he drove me around the state of Alabama and a little bit of Mississippi shooting bow tournaments.
Oh, really? At that age? Years.
Yeah. So
when you started hunting, you said you got a deer at age 14. What'd you shoot?
The first deer I killed was a nice little basket rack 8-point.
There we go.
Yeah, it was a buck. And so that was exciting. my granddad, who I mentioned, we had a farm, and so we lived on the farm. My parents, our place was there, and then my grandparents also lived on the farm, so it was a pretty good-sized farm. And my grandfather was old school at the time, and so we shot no does. It was all, you had to shoot a buck or nothing.
Yep.
So the first year I got was a buck, and I'm very proud of it. I still have that set of horns and the wooden arrow I killed it with. I actually shot it with a traditional bow. I shot compound for competition, but I still hunted with a recurve. My dad was a recurve shooter, and he's the one that was teaching me how to hunt, so I just followed him along, and I thought that's what you were supposed to do. And
Sure. Obviously,
as I got older, I realized I could hunt with a compound, and that's really when I got entrenched in this.
So, are you an instinctive shooter? Do you do fixed crawl? Are you how do you shoot when you shoot recurve? I saw just some pictures of you at ETAR this past weekend. It looks like you're shooting pretty well.
Oh, well, thank you. I get lucky. I will be honest with you. I don't do any kind of fixed crawls. I'll tell you, I'm 45 years old, and so I started shooting back when I was 14, obviously, a little younger than that with a recurve. And the way my dad taught me was basically just wrap your fingers around the string, draw back and shoot. So I would say that I shoot instinctive, but I'm going to give it a little bit of a modified instinctive. I'm not fast on the draw. So when I come back and hit my anchor point, I hold for just a second and then let go.
Yep.
Where a lot of guys that are true instinctive, as soon as they hit their anchor point, that arrow is gone. I don't snap shoot. I hold for just a second. I think that comes from the hunting background.
Yep.
With a bow, because when I come back to full draw, there's something about just trying to make sure the shot's good before I release.
Yeah.
So I definitely call myself modified. I don't actually hold my point, so I don't use a gap system.
Right.
But I've been told by a couple of great people that shoot instinctively that said, you're not really true instinctively shooting, but you're not really gap shooting, but your mind, your brain is pretty well checking out where that point is before you release the arrow. So I'll just say I'm a modified instinctive shooter.
Yeah. And for everybody listening, there are different ways to aim a traditional bow. Obviously, you don't have sights on it. So you can use the tip of the arrow and either shoot gaps, which is based on, different lengths of different distances. You can do instinctive, which is essentially the same as throwing a baseball, where you look at your target the whole time, you burn a hole with your eyes, and you basically just focus on that. And then you've got a fixed crawl, which kind of or a crawling system, which basically where you grab on the string to pull back and how your eye is kind of positioned behind the arrow is dependent on the distance of the target. So obviously I probably butchered a lot of that, but definitely Google it. There's a ton of different ways to do it, but it was something I, looking at some of your shots, had to ask, because it looked like that went pretty well.
I'm also a split finger shooter, which means I put one finger on top of the arrow and two under the bottom. The trend nowadays is I'm starting to see a lot more three under, which all of them are good. There's a lot of debate out there.
Yeah.
So I'll be the first one to tell you, I'm an archer. So if it's got a stick and a string and it launches something out of it, then I don't care what it is. I like it.
Yeah, see, James and I just made our switch to traditional hunting. We both just purchased brand new RK1s we're absolutely giddy about. And James is starting to do the three fingers under.
Fixed crawl.
The fixed crawl.
Yep, with three under. Yep.
And I am taking the split finger route.
So are you instinctive? Is that what you're going to do?
I don't even know yet.
Yeah. It's pretty early on.
It's very early. I'm just happy to put it in the air just right now.
Yeah. Yeah,
that's one thing that I was talking earlier. We were talking, and, that's the big thing about traditional and compound, and the reason the RK1 is here today, to be honest with you, is because I'm a compound guy. Obviously, I design our bows. So,
right.
Not only am I the president of the company, but I actually do the design work. And that's where my passion is. My passion is making the product. I like to see it from start to finish. But the reason the RK1 is here is I enjoy shooting traditional as well. And
right.
I wanted to be able to swap back and forth pretty easy. So you mentioned earlier the guy that he's into compound shooting and maybe he's wanting to dabble in the traditional side.
Sure.
That's where the RK1 shines, I'll be honest with you. You know, and so going back to that, I did it so I could switch easily and not have to relearn my grips or really mess up what I've got going on with the compound. You know, yep. So it's pretty nice. And I think Joe and I were talking about that when he was in the process of ordering his ETX. We're going back and forth because he's thinking about swapping.
Is he? Ooh, Joe.
Did not know that. Making some breaking news on here, Kyle. Yeah.
So Kyle, you're obviously an engineer. You do a lot of the engineering of your bows, the designing. So at what point in your life did you decide, well, first of all, what did you do before you designed bows?
Before I was designing bows, so I'll back up a little bit. So obviously I told you that I was on a farm. You know, from the farm, I got out and I actually started an archery shop and put myself through college. So, and there's a little bit of a story to that, but I went to work for an archery shop and the guy had some medical issues and he had to close it down. And so it just seemed natural. I'd already moved there and started working for him. So I was like, you know what, I'm in school. And I bought some of his inventory and started an archery shop to put myself through there. So archery's in my blood.
Right.
On that side of it too, as far as retail. So I know how to set up a bow as well. But in the process of going through school, once I got out of school, I became an electrical engineer. And I got into industrial robotics, which led me to a job of teaching industrial robotics and design at a two-year college. And that was technically my last job before fully jumping feet first in New Breed. So that's how I got into the design side of it. Being on the electrical side, I definitely have some software background and, you know, obviously electrical, but the design side of it came from the robotics. And so I learned how to do some mechanical stuff there. And it just was a natural, I was into archery and that's what I did on the weekends. And I used to Frankenstein stuff together. Mm-hmm. And for those who've heard that term, basically I probably had every bow brand out there and I'd take parts off of one and put it on another. And I just said, you know what, I'm just going to wipe the table clean, and make a bow that I want. And that's how New Breed got started. And then obviously I listen to the consumer a lot, and coming from the background of actually being in the retail business, you know, I realize the customer is the one that's important. And so you got to listen to what they want too. And I incorporated a lot of those aspects that they were asking for. When I started talking about it, I was on Archery Talk a good bit back then, and mentioned that I had a new product coming, and people started saying, man, I wish people would do this, wish people would do that. So I thought, you know what, let's give it a shot. So it's been a couple of years. Getting the right design that I wanted. Mm-hmm. And then I soft launched the company in February of 2009. And from 2009 to 13, it was really in my garage. I say that we had moved, 2011, I had moved to an actual building and had some employees. But for the first couple of years, I was basically building the bows. Myself and a couple of friends, we do it in the evenings after I got off work.
So when you're building these and you're getting input from you know, consumers, what was the main thing that you were hearing from them that kind of, you know, you try to implement in your bows?
So the first thing that I wanted implemented for myself was the grip. And that's one thing that you will see in the New Breed line. That grip is virtually the same grip that it was in 2009, and that's because, you know, I made some slight changes, obviously, listening to different people, but yeah. It needed to be the first thing everybody does when they get a bow. The first thing they do is grab it and hold it, right? And
yeah.
So it's got to feel right when the consumer picks it up and he hadn't even drawn the bow or she hadn't drawn the bow. But also at the same time, it's got to feel right when you're at full draw. And it's got to be neutral enough, but almost force your hand torque-free enough that you can't shoot it wrong. And so I spent a lot of time in the grip area, and that carries true today. The grip is where we are, where I start the bow design from, is the grip up. And we
if you look at our designs right now and the way I've got them set up, all the bows have the exact same feel. So you can swap between the ETX 35, like we were discussing.
Yep.
Or you can jump down to the Tyrant, which is the 30-inch bow. Let's say you did want a turkey bow, strictly a short bow. You can jump down to it, and when you come back, that sight window picture and the grip are going to feel the same. So it's very easy to transition between
nice.
The different new breeds in the family. So I'd say that was probably number one. Obviously, noise was a huge, you know, just make a quiet bow. And for you guys, you'll be finding out, but as you shoot them, you'll see they're quiet. The cool part about our design that I have going on right now is that you don't see a lot of, it doesn't have a lot of limb dampeners, it doesn't have much stuff stuffed in the riser to try to do anything with noise or eliminate noise, because it's been engineered to a point that the noise was actually done with the machining. We took out where the areas were. And in fact, the BTX 32, mm-hmm. the design looks really nice and I get a lot of compliments on it, but part of that design, it actually has, for lack of a better way to explain it without visually showing you, it's sort of got reverse tuning forks, so it makes the vibrations run into each other and cancel each other out, so you don't, it's got built-in vibration dampers without having to actually add a piece of equipment to it that can fail later.
Which keeps it fast, right? That if you put anything rubber on there on the limbs and stuff, that'll slow it down a little bit too. Is that right?
That's right. It slows it down a little bit, and then they deteriorate over time. And then we were discussing maybe making some long shots, you know, just playing around. Obviously, none of us are going to take unethical shots, right? But, in the playing around factor, I've seen if that rubber starts to loosen up and move around some, it'll throw your shot off at some long distances. So I wanted to eliminate anything that would cause accuracy problems,
sure.
and that was part of it.
So you're listening to these, different people saying different things, and you create you decide to start making bows. When did you come up with the name New Breed, and like when did you decide, hey, I'm not going to be a college prof and a electrical engineer anymore? I'm jumping both feet in. How did that go?
Yeah. So I mentioned 2013 was the turning point for me to say goodbye to my old job and totally be focused with New Breed. I've been very fortunate. I took on a business partner in that time frame that really had a passion for what I was doing. He had a passion for business, but he saw what I was doing and that was customer oriented, and he wanted to be involved and he enjoyed the outdoors. So he helped make that push. My wife and I were discussing starting a family. I have two small boys now.
Mm-hmm.
And so we were discussing starting a family. And it's like, you know, there's no way I'm going to juggle teaching. I'm going to also have the company in the background and then try to juggle a family. So we discussed it and decided this was where we were going to go. I was very fortunate that I had been teaching right at 12 years at that point. And so I had built it up to where I could vest and make that decision to walk away but still have a little bit of security, because, you know, it's always a risk when you're starting a business. No matter how big or small it is, it's a risk. And I really say that's when New Breed became a business. I'm not taking away from what mm-hmm. I did from 2009 to 13, but, you know, technically it was sort of still that in that hobby stage for me. I was just trying to watch it grow and see where it went. But it became a business the minute I walked in here full time.
Yeah, and so going back, I mean, you were, what did you like about teaching? Why did you teach? What brought you there?
And where did you teach, Kyle? I want to know that.
I taught at Reed State College in okay. Evergreen, Alabama.
So you're not a Crimson fan? Tell me you're not a Crimson fan.
I'm a Crimson fan.
Oh, no. Oh, no.
Yeah, my wife would kill me if I said anything else.
Oh, no. I'm leaving.
But, yeah, so I taught in Alabama, and it's a two-year college, and what I taught were the technicians that would be working on the industrial robots. Right there in the area that I mentioned, Evergreen, there's a couple of car manufacturers that's mm-hmm. popped up, and so it just was the right place to be. And what I love most about teaching is I got to share some of my knowledge. I actually do that with Archer a good bit, too, but I got to share some of my knowledge that I had learned. I've worked in field before I became a teacher.
Mm-hmm.
And so I got to share my knowledge of what I learned. The other side of that was really connecting with the student. I think this is going to go back to customers, although
back then they were students, but they were still a customer. They were there paying their money to learn a trade. And so really I connected with them and got in, you know, there's a lot of things I learned about my students and they probably learned things about me, but I think that connection, that one-on-one connection is what I've always enjoyed. And being a teacher, you can definitely get that. And the college was not gigantic. So it was, I'd call it a mid-sized school compared to a university. Like I said, this was a two-year college. And so I could still have that personal one-on-one connection with the students and really get to know them and really know that there was nothing more satisfying than, you know, a year or two down the road when one of my students would either send me an email or call or drop by and see me if they were still in the area. And, you know, their life had been changed because they had landed a job that was paying them more money than they ever thought they'd make. Yeah. So that's rewarding. And I don't know any other way, but to know that you helped change somebody's life, you know, it feels good. And I hope to do that with archery too. In fact, I had a lot of students there towards the end that got into archery pretty quick because they knew what I was doing, you know?
So you're teaching, you're starting your company. Finally, 2013 comes, you decide to jump in, and you're taking all these insights from different customers and the consumer base and archery. And obviously you're drawing up plans. At the beginning, how long did it take for you to go from, you know, first CAD drawing or however that works to, you know, the final product?
Yeah. So the first project, I always call it the napkin drawing, you know, but the first part of the stage of that, you know, you just got to get some kind of idea, even if it's in your head, but you got to just jot down some ideas on paper. And then you're right. The next stage is to go to a CAD program of some sort. I use AutoCAD currently, but you go to the AutoCAD and then you start really figuring out your angles and the design of it. Usually, from concept to actually holding a riser, it can take up to a year to really get it. And then after you hold it, you got to shoot it. And then you got to figure out what you don't like about it. I think that's one thing that you won't see, that we don't rush our product. I'm not throwing something out there every 9 months. That's not my company.
Right.
When I release a product, it's because it's been tested. So sometimes we can go up to 3 years before we release a product. So what happened for me with New Breed in 2007-ish, I pretty well had everything laid out that I wanted, and it took me to 2009 to really start soft launching a product. And that soft launch, I keep using that word, but I was just really selling them to close friends and family and a few people on Archery Talk I got to know and some guys at tournaments. And it was really neat to get their responses back. I mean, I had, if you look us up today, we do pretty good. We don't pay anybody to say anything about us. And if you look up what's going on, it's hard to find a bad word about us. You know, you're not going to please everybody. I'm never going to claim to that, but it's really nice to be in that 90% range of people being happy.
Yeah. Well,
I can agree with that. I just spent the last, I don't know how long it's been since we talked the first time, Kyle, but I did my due diligence and did my research, and he got a cult-like fanatical fan base, and it's hard to find bad things.
Yep.
It really is.
And I think one part of that is we're appreciative of the people that buy our bow. I used to, in the very beginning, and it's hard to do nowadays, and I'm probably going to get back to it, but I mean, I used to, if I knew who bought one on Archery Talk or some other forum, I'm not an advocate for them, so I need to probably quit saying that a bunch, but that's just where I was at the time before Facebook. Now Facebook is popular, right? And Instagram. But I would go on there and thank those guys for purchasing or ladies for purchasing a bow. And, you know, that's almost unheard of nowadays to get that. And, you know, I try to do as much as I can, even if I don't do it individually anymore. Just every once in a while, I'll go on my Facebook and just thank everybody for the support. And it's not of any really gigantic because somebody did something for me. I just want to make sure that they know that they're doing that. As much as they appreciate us, we appreciate them. So
yeah. So go ahead, Joe.
I was just gonna say I like it, and one of the things that sold me to the company, if you want to say it that way, is I like that you're not trying to keep up with the Joneses. because every year I go to the bow shops and it's a letdown. You know, this is new. You got this new great bow. This, and you shoot it, and it's not that much better. But me, along with these other bow companies, I got to keep up with the Joneses myself. Well, then I got to get the new bow, and it's really not that much better than the old bow. And it takes me months to really get my bow to where I want it for hunting.
And by that time, they got something else new out.
Yeah. Yeah, and that was a big thing for at least Jared and I too. I mean, talking about switching to a traditional archery, having a bow for more than, 9 to 12 months was not common for us for a long time, and I'm hoping to move that way. And it's funny what you say about, the cult-like following that you have. My first kind of time actually looking at new breed archery was I saw a post Donnie Vincent when he was doing some bow kind of shootout, or I don't know, he was choosing a bow or something, and he said he got like 1.5 million messages on Instagram and Facebook and stuff because of everybody telling him to try new breed archery. And the things he said about you, Kyle, it sounds like you sent him some bows to give away. That was what got me like, these are some guys that I'd like to hear more about.
Yeah, absolutely. He is a fun guy. I've spent some time on the phone with him. We have not spent time together face-to-face, but I talked with him on the phone, and he said, hey, he was pretty straight up, because when he reached out to me, I said, okay, man, I'm just going to ask you straight up. Is this, have you already got something picked out, and this is just a way to make that company look better, because I don't want to be part of a marketing tool.
Right.
And I said, absolutely not. And I truly believe that. And he said it wasn't. And so we chatted for a bit, and he said, look, man, I'll go as far as this. I just want to shoot them, play around with them. And then he said, if we can't work a deal in some shape, form, or fashion, I'll send them back to you. And I sent them to him, and he had a lot of great things to say about our product. In fact, one of them, it was sort of funny, but he said, if Batman had a bow, it'd be a new breed. So
I've said that among us. I've made that comment before. I've actually called my bow Bruce for a while, and not the manliest name, I guess, for a bow, but Bruce. It's the name of Batman, man. Yeah, no, that's very cool. And so now, how are things going at New Breed right now? You're making the big consumer direct switch. How's everything else going there?
It's going good. The industry, I've watched this industry, so I will give you a little bit more backstory to myself as well. Before I was teaching, I mentioned I had an archery shop, and somewhere in the middle of that too, I would mention that I worked for McPherson Archery of Alabama. Let me make sure I clarify that one. It was not the McPherson of today, but the McPherson Archery of Alabama. I worked for those guys, and that's sort of what sparked me to go to college, to be honest with you. So I've seen the industry do a lot of different things over time.
But why is that made you want to switch to college? And tell me a little bit more about McPherson. Are they connected with Matthews somehow, or how does that work?
They are today. But originally, Matt McPherson owned a company called McPherson Archery. He sold the company to some guys in Alabama, South Alabama, Bruton. And that's how I got involved. I was a very young age. 19 at the time, I believe, right around there. I was just out of high school and took on a job there. I was into archery anyway. I mentioned that, but then I took a job at that. How can you not want to take that job if you're into archery the way I was? And so I took the job, and I actually started out as a warranty tech, because when they bought the company, they knew, they just were buying a business. They were already in the hunting industry. Eddie Salter calls, so they were doing turkey calls, and they thought this would be a good move to get a bow company. Matt was selling McPherson Archery at the time, and the reason I got hired is I worked on Eddie Salter's bow since I was a teenager, and I was still a teenager obviously then, but I worked on his bow, and they needed somebody who could talk the language and really work on bows when they came in for warranty. So I got that job, and I met a guy named Danny Moran. They had hired him from Bear Archery, and he was the lead engineer at the time, and he's the one that sparked me to continue on and go to college. I originally back then, AutoCAD, you still did hand drafting almost back then, and AutoCAD was just getting started, and to get into that side of the world, you almost had to get into some type of engineering. I chose electrical engineering. My dad has an electrical background, so it was just sort of familiar, and that's where I got my start. But that's what drove me to go to college, is I realized that I wanted to do something. I didn't know I was going to wind back up in the archery industry. Other than shooting, I shot for several companies in between that. And then, like I said, I actually ran a little archery shop called Hunter's Headquarters and Hollows and Hunter's Headquarters and Hobbies in Louisville, Mississippi. And so during the summer, built remote control airplanes. During the winter, sold archery gear, put myself through school.
So you've been tinkering around with stuff for a long time.
Yeah, I'm a tinker. I think it's I like to call it a farm trade. It's when you grow up 17 miles out of town and something breaks, you got to learn how to fix it. And when your dad's the guy that is always fixing stuff on the farm, it's sort of natural when he drags you along with him that you learn how to tinker pretty easy.
Yeah.
So it's actually a quality that that at the time I didn't know I was getting. And, you know, at one point I wanted to be off the farm pretty quick. You know, all teenagers do, you know, didn't want to live 17 miles out of town. And every time your friends were doing something, you always felt like you couldn't go because it was going to be a hassle to get there when you were younger. And, but now the farm's the only place I want to be. So
do you have a farm right now?
I do not own a farm right now. I do own a couple of acres out in the country. When we decided to have children, my wife and I, we discussed it, and we were in town, and she's a country girl as well. And we were talking about it, and I said, you know, if I could just find a couple of acres, I've got almost 3 acres, and which is not gigantic, so it's not like, I do have deer in the backyard, though. I'm pretty proud of that. But anyway, I wanted somewhere that I could turn my kids loose a little bit like I got to do, maybe not on the same scale I did. We were on a large farm, and, you know, I'd disappear at daylight and come home at dark. But I wanted somewhere they could get outside, and, you know, they didn't have to look at a neighbor. They don't. And so that's the cool thing. I don't have to look at a neighbor. And it's not that I don't like neighbors. It's just the fact that I just want to be able to do it.
You need a little distance between you and your neighbors. Mm-hmm. You like them, but a little farther away.
Yep. There you go. And so it's fun. I mean, KJ, which is my oldest son, he's 6. And then I have a 2-year-old, or about to be 2 in August, which is right around the corner tomorrow, next day, somewhere in there.
2 days.
And so he's about to be 2, and they love it out there. They can sort of run around and play in the water hose and do what they want to do. And KJ's gotten old enough, you know, we just cut him loose, and he's already in the process of, you know, building forts and throwing rocks and all kind of cool stuff, you know.
So do you take those guys hunting at all?
KJ is probably going to go on his real hunt this year. Okay. I don't want to push it. So I mentioned I killed my first deer at 14 with a bow. Before that, I killed one with a gun. But my dad, he would take me when I was younger, but he really didn't want me killing anything until I think I was 12 when I killed my first deer. I had been on several hunts with him, and he had the gun.
Right.
I got to sit there. But, you know, times have changed, obviously, since those periods. But, you know, I don't want to push it on them by any means, but I almost feel like that's what gave me the fire a little bit, is like me having to watch Dad for a couple of years. So I'm going to take him this year and let him sit, and I'm not going to shoot a deer off from under him. I'm going to let him have something. But if it doesn't happen for him, I'm not going to force it. I've seen people, you know, they try to get their gun, their kid to wrap their arm around the gun and get their eye close to the scope and all that. And that's not what I want to do. So I'm just going to let it be natural. If it's something that works for him, then I'm taking him this year. John, obviously, a little too young right now. I don't think I could keep him entertained enough.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Does Alabama have a youth hunt at all?
They do have a youth season. I'm not up to speed on it. I'll probably get up to speed on it, but I don't think I'm going to take him during that weekend. I'm just going to wait.
Sure.
Taking, you know, let they, and I'm really in debate of what to do. He's not, so Alabama has a 35 or 40 pound. I've been reading a little bit, and I know some other states have 40 pounds, but I think it's 35 pounds here in Alabama for a compound. He obviously shoot, or a bow.
Yeah.
Just a compound. He shoots, but he's not up to that yet. So I don't know.
Oh, so that, that, that's a minimum poundage they have to be able to pull back in order to hunt?
Yeah. I think Michigan's like 40, 45.
Oh, it is?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Most all your states nowadays have some kind of minimum.
Yeah, we're at 35 for big game animals.
Shoot, back when I was doing it, mine was probably about 20 pounds.
Yeah. No, but I think you're right, though, Kyle. Part of it, you kind of like add some excitement or, you know, desire to hunt by not letting your kid hunt, or maybe going and just telling him stories about it. I remember, you know, my dad would go away and hunt, and it would drive me crazy that I couldn't go there. And so I'd grab a stick and sit in my backyard until dark. And then when he would come in, he would call me and tell me about his hunt, and I'd tell him about my imaginary hunt that I was went on. But I mean, that you're kind of like building some of that excitement for when you finally get to go. And then when you get to go, you're just sitting there watching your dad hunt, but it's just as exciting.
Mm-hmm. Well, and at what point do the kids understand what they're doing?
Right.
I mean, my 6-year old wants to hunt in the worst way. It's not happening. He's going to experience life and death and in the woods, and he's going to understand what killing an animal is. I don't harvest animals. I kill animals. Now I use them. I use them. I eat them. But I don't just, it's not this friendly. It's not a Disney movie out there. And I want him to be mentally able to comprehend that he just took an animal's life in the process of what he's doing and what we call hunting and killing. It's not a video game where you pull the trigger, you push the X button, and the animal dies, and then it regenerates. No, right. It's finality, and I don't think my son can grasp that yet. Even when he watches me kill an animal, he still didn't actually do it. And I can see in his eyes he's fighting with it, and he's not even the one that's doing it.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, there's like a trans, you know, like a progression you make. I feel like when you're growing up, like a young boy, I remember as like a young kid, I got like a BB gun young, and then a 22, and then a shotgun, then a rifle. But up until not that terribly long ago, all my hunting was just about making something dead. I didn't really think much beyond that, you know, especially when I was younger. And I remember finally one day my great grandma, you know, she pulled me out aside and was like, you know, if you shoot it, you got to eat it. And from then on, I'm like, oh, okay. So, now I guess I got to think a little bit more about what I'm doing. And then
no more shooting those frogs.
Exactly. You get older and you start thinking like, instead of just making something dead, there's something precious that you're pursuing. And, you know, taking its life is actually a pretty significant thing. That thing's been walking around the woods for years. And it's a big deal.
Yeah, I totally agree. So I'm sort of back and forth with it, but I want to take him just, if nothing else, to get him out there, and maybe just get the fundamentals down. And so that's one thing that I mentioned. I had deer in my backyard. I feed them in my backyard. They are not deer to hunt. You know, that's not. And even though I got 3 acres, it butts up against some woods of somebody else's, and then we feed them. And you know, it's cool. And I've got them where now, pretty much, so KJ knows how to sneak up to the window to look. You know, our back door is glass, so he's learned how to sneak and sort of corner off and get around the edge of the table. And I think that's cool because he thinks it's so neat that he snuck up to the glass and then didn't run. <Yeah. you know? laughs>
Wait till you're in the woods, bud.
Yeah.
Well, how old's KJ, Kyle?
He's 6. And then,
he's 6?
Yep. And John will be 2 in August, so showing him the deer, he just runs straight at the glass and runs over. it's pretty comical at this point. And it's sort of comical to see KJ get on to John and be like, no, you got to do this, buddy. And something tells me all he's doing is mimicking something I probably did to KJ.
That's
well,
good
and,
stuff.
You know what? All kids develop differently as well. I mean, and that's it's like I said, my boy's really only 5. He's going to be 6 before he would ever even think about it. I don't look at him as being ready. And actually I every kid's different, but the stuff he learns when he's out there, when it comes time, he'll be ready. And I mean, you got to take them out there. If you're not taking them out there, you're missing out on the most. I mean, we went fishing, and yesterday was the first time we've been fishing a bunch, but we went fishing in a creek, and it was hot, so we waded in. And he argued with me. He was wearing his muck boots come hell or high water. telling him different. Well, then when he went over his muck boots and the water didn't come back out of him, he was like, well, dang, this was a bad idea. Next time I'm wearing my tennis shoes, like Dad said, it's all learning, and it's so cool watching it.
Oh, absolutely. And the kids learn every part of it. So I've taken my daughter, Dee, I've taken her hunting since she was about 2.5. She's 6 now. And I've also, she's helped me butcher the deer. I do all the butchering myself. So she knows every part of the animal. She's literally, when she was like 4 years old, would be clapping, as I'm taking apart this deer. And you tell most people and they're like, what are you making your daughter watch? But to her, it's just like, this is how it works. You shoot a deer, you eat it, you cut it up and you eat it. And now we get to the point where, I'll take the heart out and I won't even get a bite of the heart. That's her cut of meat. I shot a bunny a couple months ago and she was like, Dad, where's the heart? I said, well, I couldn't salvage the heart. And she was legitimately upset. And so, it's funny the things that you can teach or that have been taught to your kids, because, a lot of kids maybe that haven't been taught where their food comes from or, how that works, and they hear heart and they're all grossed out when it's kind of just a natural thing that if you're introduced to it at a young age, it's not a huge deal.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And so I totally agree with that. And I'm a little excited. We mentioned food, and I'll say this, I'm a little excited about sort of the new trends that people are starting to get, that while we hunt, somebody, y'all just mentioned a minute ago that it was all about killing. It's not all about killing, it really is a lifestyle, and you get totally entrenched with it. And, part of it for me, when I was younger, every deer we kill, we ate. And now every deer I kill, we eat. And that's just the way it is.
Yep. No, it's a cool trend to see, and it's really rewarding when you hunt that way. When you're cut, you're part of the entire process.
Mm-hmm.
It starts in the summer, the winter before, till scouting it, to shooting it, to cutting it up, to serving it to people. It's but there are people out there that are really good advocates for stuff like that. We talked about Donnie Vincent. We've talked about like Steve Rinella on the podcast before. Right. Those
that's
guys
still
are
still something I want to try that using that call.
Even
call
Joe thing. Rogan.
Yeah. Joe Rogan,
Joe Rogan's been killing it lately with that.
Yeah. Yep.
You might not agree with all his views, but he's done a world of help for us as hunters and conservationists.
Yeah, absolutely. Yep. So Kyle, you've got some young kids. Do you get out even hunting at all? That's a lot of kids running around.
I do. I got my wife, before we met, she knew this was my wife. Obviously I've been in archery for a long time. And so, she knew that was just part of it. It's what makes me. And, if I don't go, I never use the excuse what my wife said or whatever, 'cause that's not true. If I don't go, it's because I got a lot going on in life, and it's just easy to tell my buddies that, so I don't have to fess up and say that I got a lot going on.
But, right.
Starting a company, having a family, all that plays in the mix of how much I get to go, but yeah, I go. I'm, for lack of a better term, I would say that I'm addicted to it. It's not a bad thing. I could have a lot worse hobbies and habits. And so, that's actually one thing I get praised for a good bit by my wife. She, she definitely doesn't have to find me. She knows that I'm in the woods. You know what I mean? And so, I just try to be a good husband. And when I'm home, I make the best possible quality time, and then I get to go just like I was at ETAR and she was back home. I got to go and shoot bows this weekend and hang out with some cool friends and make some new ones, and she gets it and she likes it, and she gets out when she can. I think when John gets a little bit older, she sort of knows the deal. When John hits a certain age, she's either going to be with the program or sitting at home and hearing about our
hunter widow.
She pretty well gets in. She, like I said, she was a country girl anyway, so she grew up around that mentality. So it wasn't anything I've got buddies of mine that have hunted before, and they met their significant other, and you know, they had never been in that lifestyle, so they don't get it. But luckily, I got one that gets it, so I'm pretty lucky.
That's a pretty big deal. You got any?
Oh,
big,
it is.
You have any big hunts planned for 2018?
I never have anything super gigantic. I'm definitely going elk hunting. I'll probably go to Colorado. A buddy of mine, we usually go every year. Andrew Clark, he's actually a really good hunter. And we will probably go out to Colorado and do a do-it-yourself hunt. We've done it for the last couple of years, and we've had some fun at it. We feel like there's one mountain that owes us an elk, so we're we're determined at this point that mountain owes us an elk. We've got a couple of stories about that, but
you got some unfinished business.
Yeah.
Do what?
You got some unfinished business out there.
Yeah, I lost one on that do-it-yourself hunt on that same mountain, and then there's been a miss out there too. I admit I miss. So
that'll happen.
Yeah, it happened, and so I feel like that mountain owes me one, and I think Andrew feels the same way. And that's one thing I'll mention about the Western hunting. It's new to me. It's a new. I have killed an elk. I killed one in 2010. And then I did that on a guided hunt. And then I got in, you know, I was like, well, I got to go all out now. And so we started going every other year after that. And then now it's almost every year for the last couple of years since I've gotten, you know, y'all mentioned we got a lot going on in life, but now we've got, both of us have gotten to the point that we can go every year. And finding the right hunting partner makes a difference. And we hunt pretty good together. We actually hunt deer here in Alabama. He takes me on his lease, and then he's got a couple of places in Kentucky he goes, and I got a couple of places in Indiana I go. So it works out pretty good. But I'm a do-it-yourself kind of guy. The one, I guess, hunt that I look forward to every year, and I actually pay for it. And I guess some people would ask me, you know, why do you do it? Why, you know, I wouldn't spend that kind of money, but I do it for the relaxation of it. But in December, that's a pretty big month for me. Right before Christmas, we're getting ready for trade shows. And we've got, if we do have new product releasing, we've got that. And we're also winding down over what our sales have been from the year before. So I need a little, you know, getaway. And so I go to Terra Wildlife every year. And I pay for that one hunt. That's the one hunt I pay for. And, you know, it's just nice to go out there and sort of not have to think about it. Those guys guide you, and they take you out and let you, you know, they hopefully try to get you one. I will say this, it's not high fence. It's regular hunting just like everybody else. So the biggest difference is they feed you really well, and they already have the stand set up. So.
Oh, that's where is this?
That's about it. I've gone to Terra and come home with a full belly and a full quiver load of arrows before, so but I still go back because of the experience.
Yeah, where is this place?
It's Terra Wildlife in Mississippi. It's okay. Near Vicksburg.
We're from the north, you know. Yeah. We don't venture that far south.
So it's in the Delta. This is, so I'll back up and give you a little bit of a story, but Terra is, ever since I was younger, my younger hunting days, it was one of those places that I always said, if I can ever afford to go there, I'm going to do it. And it's not super expensive. I'm making it sound like it's ridiculous. It's really not. It's just, if you're a hunter, it's, you know, it's not expensive, but it's not for a 3-day hunt. It's, you'd probably pay a 5-day rut hunt, you know, somewhere else, but for a 3-day hunt here, you know, so it's equivalent to that. But this is the one place in the South you can go that they grow big deer. I mean, you have a possibility. It's bow hunting only, and you have a possibility of, you know, shooting 160 class plus deer there. Now, have I killed 160 class of Terra? No. I'm an opportunist, so I kill the first program deer that comes along. Most of the program deer that are there, they have certain rules you have to go by, so you can't just go shoot anything that walks past you. Most of those are at least Pope and Young, so I've killed some nice popping young deer there. So.
Yeah, that's fantastic.
And then that's also like, it's getting towards their rut, isn't it?
Yeah, December is their rut. So I used to go in October, which is their season starts in October in Mississippi. And I used to go the first or second weekend, I think. or second hunt. It basically fell on a weekend, but it was the first week, and I enjoyed it, and I actually killed a really nice deer the first year I went and got hooked. But the reason I go in the rut now is December makes more sense for me, and then I am trying to, since I've been to Terra a few years, I am trying to get that little bit higher class deer.
Right.
You know, but it's hunting, so one thing I have to keep in mind is that by the time I get there, I think last year they killed 70 something bucks. So, you know, it's not a guarantee. There's, you know, the big deer can already get killed if they're there. It's a nice little place to go and a lot of acreage, and those guys manage it really well. It's on a management program, so it's super nice. But that's my big hunt that I have planned. The other hunts are big to me because I make every hunt an adventure.
Yep.
I hunt in Indiana. I got some friends there, and I go hunting with them, and it's a, you know, for lack of a better term, do it yourself. It's not really a lease, but it's private land, so I'm not going to say it's public land, but, you know, it's not like some guys got a stand. I go and set my own stands up, and we have a good time, and then I get to go, I think I'm going to, where am I going this year? Andy Morgan, I think we're going to go to Kansas with him, so that's pretty exciting. He's invited me to go with him. So that's a big one that's on my hit list this year. And so,
that sounds like you got some good hunts in coming up.
Yeah.
Do you do much hunting in around your home, or you just mainly focus on when you go on trips, you know, when it's when you're at home, it's business and family.
When I'm at home, it's business and family. I probably will see a transition to that as my children get older, obviously.
Yeah.
But when I'm home, it's business and family. And then I'm a transplant to where I am now. I'm an Alabamian. I'm still in Alabama. But I was from South Alabama. Now I'm in about mid Alabama or North Alabama, just right on the mid state area of Alabama. And, I moved up here because it was a better move for the company, more population, more locations to airports, you know, just a bigger metropolitan area. But so anyway, moved up here, and I really, once I moved here, I thought, you know, by the time I run out there, and so I'll share this with you, by the time I run out and get a lease and try to hang stands and do whatever, you know, I go sit a couple hours and then I run home, and then I'm trying to either come to the office or I'm trying to do something with the family or something. I just wasn't getting the same feel that I get when I go off on a hunt. I may go for 3 or 4 or 5 days, but I'm probably hunting more in those 3 to 4 or 5 days than I hunt all year if I had a place in the backyard, you know?
Makes it more serious.
Well, Cal, you're from the South. Have you ever read, and I got this big misperception about Southern deer hunting, or maybe I don't. Have you ever read The 10th Legion?
No, I hadn't read that one.
It's like a Southern turkey hunting Bible, but he has a kind of a disdain for Southern deer hunting, and I have this big perception of the dog hunt with the scatter guns and the buckshot, and Southern hunting seems foreign to me. And I one of these days I got to go down and just experience what Alabama and, you know, the Delta is for deer hunting, especially with a bow. In the late season, because I have this perception of this like crazy woods, you know, thicker than a jungle, and just dogs and shotguns and people everywhere. And I'm sure it's not like that, but that's what I've got from this book.
It's not. You know, when I was younger, I've been on a dog hunt before. I'm not scared to say this. It was part of life. That's, you know, how I learned how to hunt.
Part down there, right?
Do what now?
Huge part of like life, yeah, and hunting down there, from what I gather.
Yep. But I turned into a bow hunter pretty quickly. But what I'm getting at there is everybody has their way of they want to hunt, and if it's controlled the right way, and, you know, in the beginning, it's like anything else. I mean, if you got people that turn loose a pack of dogs and it runs all over your land and you don't want dogs on it, then guess what? That's going to be a problem. And so over time, people have learned how to control that type of hunting, and there's only certain days that it's allowed, and national forests that we have here or public land that we have, they don't allow dogs on them. So that's, you know, you can get involved in that. And a lot of people are like, oh, Alabama has, you know, public land. Yeah, we got public land. We actually have some pretty good public land, and I like doing those hunts. I've probably gone with people more on those than I have, you know, private land. But it's fun. I mean, just a new adventure and something to do in bow hunting. But a lot of that mentality's changed. You know, it used to be the old mentality, if it's brown, it's down, you know, or how many deer can we kill in a year? And because Alabama, we get a ridiculous, well, we did, you know, luckily our state's changing some things, but we used to could kill a buck and a doe a day. And that changed. Now we get 3 bucks, and there's so many does, and now they cut the doe day. They used to have just doe days, and they're sort of going back. So they got a lot of new laws that are helping be more conservational, I guess.
Oh, I think, I mean, I'm a Yankee. I'm a born and bred Yankee from the north, Pennsylvania, never went much. Yeah, if I go down south, it's along the coast. But I always thought it'd be I thought it would be fun. And I mean, that book at 10th Legion, it was Colonel Tom Kelly that wrote it. If you ever get a chance, it's a good read. Yeah. But
you still got an accent though, Joe. Let's not forget that.
Pennsylvania.
I'm sure. But you guys act like you got one better than me.
You just plug your nose and you'll have a Michigan sound just accent. Like,
well, I'm all stuffed up tonight, so it ain't helping me at all either.
Well, it's as simple as this. Y'all drink pops, we drink Coke.
That's right.
But Coke is everything.
Yeah.
You ask for a Coke, so you get a Pepsi.
Coke is life. If you ask for a Coke, they ask you which flavor.
Yeah. No, I want a Coke.
Yeah.
That is the flavor.
You say, hey, I want a Coke. They say, which flavor? You say, Dr. Pepper, and you keep going.
Kyle, you're telling, you know, going back to New Breed, you got anything new in the works right now?
I've always got something working. I mean, I do, and you had asked earlier, and I don't think I answered this, so I'm going to answer it now. How did I come up with the name New Breed?
That's right, yeah.
So you asked that, and then we got talking about a couple of different things. But the way I came up, so the cam system that I have, it's now getting to be popular, but it was very similar when I started. It was very similar to the one cam. It was not really heard of. It was the two-track system,
mm-hmm.
and I was definitely an early adopter of that system and really worked with it to get it to where, and I've always had that cam system. There's some other companies that are jumping on board with that, and so a two-track cam-to-cam system basically works similar to a one-cam. They're all tied together, but it's just... it's a two-cam bow instead of being the old traditional two-cam bow where they sort of worked independently. You had to keep them in time all the time. So I was sitting there, and after I had this cam, and I had all these cool features like the different mods that swap between the three different cams, but you don't have to have small, medium, and large. I was like, what am I going to do? And I was sitting there writing, and I don't know, somewhere in there I jotted down a New Breed of cam, and I was like, oh, that's it, a New Breed of bow. And then it just... it went from there, you know, and New Breed Archery was born right there when I was trying to come up with some kind of marketing language to really have people focus on the cam. Because one thing I do at New Breed, and it's not really a trade secret, but when I'm designing a bow, I always seem to base everything around the cam system where, like I said, I adopted that cam system and then built my bow around it, where a lot of companies, they already have some designs in the works, and they try to just sort of adopt the cam to that design. I did it the other way around. And so I think that's what really makes our bow shine, is that, you know, the actual engine that drives the car, which is the cams on the bow here, is what I designed the bow around, instead of basically designing the car and then trying to shove some engine in it, you know. So
yeah, that's interesting. That's a great way to do it. I mean, I'm sure, and we'll be posting quite a bit about this and how that translates into good performance.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's a huge deal.
Yep, it is. And so, you know, that's where New Breed came from. And I was, your other question that you would ask, you know, do I have anything in the works? I'm always, so we talked earlier and I said I was a tinkerer,
mm-hmm.
By heart. So yeah, I'm the guy that wakes up at 3 a.m. that some idea went off in my head and I got to go jot it down, at least in a notebook, or, my wife will probably tell you I'm in there, you know, clicking away on my computer trying to get some kind of rough drawing that when I wake up, I'll lay back down. If I get up at 3 a.m. with that idea and then lay back down and then get back up at, you know, 5 or 6, I go and look at that drawing. I'm like, what was I thinking? You know, but
right.
If I was thinking it, and then it sort of dawns another idea and I sort of build off of that. So I'm that guy. I'm always working on something. I'm never trying to just say I'm happy with what I got.
Yeah, it's like the Jerry Seinfeld who wakes up in the middle of the night, writes a joke, and he can't figure out what he wrote. You know,
yeah.
He can't. He goes the whole episode trying to figure out what his joke is.
Yeah, and, you know, some of the materials that are out there, I mean, for this industry, we sort of hit a little bit of a plateau with the materials that we've got to work with. There, you know, there's some materials out there that obviously we could work with, but they're not in the scope of our field. And, you know, until those become more affordable, we've really just got to hone on what we've got and what materials. And so we use some of the highest grade materials out there that you can get. And you may or may not know this, but in all our compounds, all the assembly nuts and bolts and screws, if you will, are either titanium or stainless steel. So we do that because I'm a hunter. Actually use our product, and I didn't want my bow to be rusty or squeaking or right. Something else I had to do so. And then the titanium is actually used because it actually helps with the vibration.
Interesting.
Dampening. So pretty neat.
Yeah, it's neat.
One of the things we talked about earlier, and it wasn't, I don't even know if it, we might have brought it up here, but I like the fact that you're not willing to release a bow until you have something that's better than what you already have out there substantially. Like you're not just tweaking things a little bit and being like, here you go with a new face on it or a new name. I like that.
Right. Right. And I'll tell you this, the BX-32, actually I will give that fair credit for the consumer. Here's what's pretty neat about that. A lot of guys said, man, if you just make me a short blade, I'd buy it. And, of course, I couldn't just go chop off a blade and
right.
put it out there. I had to make some changes. So, but that's where the BX-32 came from, was the original blade that I had. It started in 2015 and went through to just last year. It was a 34. We dabbled between 33.5 and 34.5. You know, it floated between those over the last couple of years. And I just had people keep telling me, man, I wish you'd make a shorter blade type bow. And so that's, I started that process, and that's where the BX-32 grew from. But obviously I improved it. Instead of just the gusset, I do the split gusset now, and I changed a little bit of way the harmonics work on the riser. So always improving. That's our plan. And I just don't want to throw something out there. You know, I've seen too much of that. You know, let's just spray paint a different color and give it a different name, and miraculously it's a new bow, and let's charge $200 more for it.
Right. maybe increase the axle to axle length and put a number on the end of the bow and re-release it.
Yep. And so I don't want to do that. And I get asked this a lot. If you open up our catalog, most of our bows have the same speed rating across, and they're like, well, this one's 35 and it's shooting just as fast as this one at 32. But if you look at, I build the bows to perform. So like our VX-32, it's 32-inch axle-to-axle, but it has a 7.25-inch brace height. The reason it has a 7.25-inch brace height instead of a 6-inch brace height is I still want that bow to be as accurate as possible. So I could have probably made it a 6-inch brace height. I could have made it a little faster to get my numbers to look good on a piece of paper.
Right.
But you wouldn't have been as accurate with it. So I want you to be – I want you to make the shot that's going to harvest the deer, you know, at the end of the day. Or animal. We hunt other things besides the deer, right?
But, and that goes right back to the consumer, trying to listen to the consumer. What do people actually care about? You know, what will improve their experience? And then that goes back to your interest in customizing and making a bow that has a real custom feel to it.
Yep. And, you know, one thing I'm glad to start seeing is the speed is starting to lose interest. I mean, that was there for a while. That was the marker, you know. That was, man, if you didn't hit a certain speed, you know, you don't even have a bow yet. And we do real numbers, man. There's lab testing for numbers, and then there's real numbers. And if you look at a lot of the reviews that people have done on the new breed bow, I always hear people say, you know, man, I had a bow that was rated at 350 feet a second. And you rate yours at 335, but for some reason, my end gaps are tighter on your bow. And for some reason, I've noticed that when I put my hunting setup on it, it seems faster than the bow that was 350. Can you explain that? And I'll just tell you straight up, when we test our product and we put the 335 rating, we're not using, you know, a tile knock, and we're not stretching it out. There's all kind of little numbers and deviations you can throw on those ratings. You know, I'm not stretching out an extra 3/4 of an inch draw length. I'm not adding another 3.5 pounds. I'm not shaving 7 grains off the arrow and then shooting it through there. If I did, then I could chop down a number, you know, instead of 335, I could put 347 on there. But when you get it and you push your fletched arrow and your D-loop and your peep sight and all the stuff that you're going to use to make that bow function, and then it just, poof, it dies right off. So what I do is I try to still call it an IBO rating because that's what people associate with speed. I still call it that, but really it's our way, and we put all that stuff on it and go shoot it through a chronograph, and then we give the numbers. And what I really like to do is get that experience of when a guy calls you up and says, man, this bow's faster than I thought it was going to be with my hunting setup. That's what we're after. I certainly don't want the phone call where the guy goes, man, this thing's slower than I thought it was going to be. that's what I'm looking for. So I'm just trying to give a real world scenario, and I'm not saying I'm the only company that does that. There's some other good companies out there, but, you know, go out there and try some of them. And Field and Stream actually did a bow test. It's been a little while back now. I can't remember exactly the year. It hadn't been too long ago, but our bow, so the way they were just writing down specs, they had us listed as, you know, middle of the pack to the lower end of the speed spectrum, and that's what they said. But then they actually wrote in the article, they actually said, but miraculously at 20 yards, for some reason, the new breed shined. And it's because we didn't do all the,
right.
They were basing it off the numbers they wrote down. But then when they actually shot them through the chronograph, when they shot the arrow through the chronograph at 20 yards, we were ahead of the curve. And it's because I've designed that cam to store as much energy as possible into that arrow. And I'm not worried about it coming out of the gate. I just want to know what it's doing at 20 yards. That's where we kill things.
Right. Yeah. Right.
I'm going to leave this podcast just more excited to take delivery of this bow. Every time I start reading up or looking into things, or I just can't wait to get this thing and start shooting it. I'm ready to shoot.
Well, we're excited for you. Like I said, the customization thing is what really kicks it off for me on a personal level. So I actually take pictures of almost. When I'm in the office, and I'm not gone a lot, but, you know, I have a life outside of here, and then I do get to go hunting, thank goodness. That's what, you know, I do support my habit. I said it's an addiction. So, but I almost take pictures of all of them, and they laugh at me. In fact, just the other day, they had to cut open a box because I was like, hey, what happened to the – we had done a really cool-looking bow. It wasn't a camo, but it was just some multicolors. We do some solid colors as well, and some guy wanted a certain, like a brown limb with a green riser, and he put some cool tan stickers on it, you know. So it wasn't even a camo bow. I'm like, where'd that bow go? I saw that order getting built, and they said, oh, we boxed it already. And I'm like, well, we're gonna cut the tape off that one. I gotta have a picture. So yeah. That's one other thing I'll share real quick about our company, which we try to sell it as best as possible. It is the truth. We build these bows one at a time. Now, obviously, we're machining the risers and the limbs and masts, you know, but once we get them in and start matching the parts, it's just like building a race car. We take all those parts, and one technician, when he starts a bow, he finishes that bow. And that's the cool part to what we do. And every one of these guys that build a bow can tell you right now, whether or not that bow feels right or not. You know, it's not just, hey, let's hammer on this and go on to, you know, all they do is hammer on the limb and off to the next project. And then some guy's putting on a cam, another guy's putting on a string, and the guy on the end, he's just pulling it back to see if it's in time. He don't know if that bow feels right or wrong or in tiller or out of tiller or anything, because he doesn't know. He just knows he's supposed to pull it back and check the time and keep going. Our guys know what everything's supposed to feel like. They can draw a bow back and just about tell you if it's at the right draw length before they even put it on the draw boards. And
that's awesome.
You know, that's what you want, man. You want a guy building a bow the same way that you would build it if you were putting it together. I mean, you know, and so that's exciting. And we do have quality checks. So at the end of the day, they usually swap each other's workstations to look over the bows before they get packed. That's another thing that we do. We may get fussed out a little bit, but every bow sits 24 hours after it's been built, at least 24 hours. It may sit a little longer, but I truly believe in this. A bow has to settle when it's built. And so we let them sit. And before we box them, it's not like they instantly get built and boxed. It's pretty much so they sit for 24 hours or so, and they're checked again for timing, and just making sure everything's right draw length before we put it in the box. Because what we want is that experience when you open the box, it's right. One of the biggest compliments we get from individuals that receive our bow is, man, the bow was just right out of the box. I didn't have to tinker with it. I didn't have to spend 30 minutes getting the bow ready to get set up. I could just put my equipment on it and go. And we get a lot of compliments about that. And that to me says that's who we are. In a nutshell, we build quality products, and we want it to be built just like we were building it for ourselves. No matter how big or small we are as a company, you know, like I said, we started in a garage literally, and from there have grown. And so every day is a, you know, when I can walk in and say I've got an office, and when I can walk in and see the machines running and see the robotic arm actually dipping putting the hydro dip on, you know, where it used to be done by hand. So, you know, it's sort of cool to get to that stage of life, you know.
Well, and it's nice now Jared doesn't have to dry fire his bow to settle the limbs, you know. That's been his
my weakness.
Don't dry fire our bows.
Now, well, you tell me.
Well, Kyle, you know, I appreciate you taking the time tonight to talk. You know, Joe, Jared, you guys have any final questions or finishing thoughts you guys want to have with Kyle here yet?
I'm good.
All
right. You got to get your hands on that bow.
Yeah, I just want.
I just can't wait. I thought of some things because, like, Kyle brought up a point about, like, all these custom options, and I'm thinking, you know, that bow would look really good with an ASAT riser and then maybe the matching tan limbs with some type of new breed. I don't know. Like, I got all these thoughts going through my head now, and I'm actually having trouble forming complete sentences.
Well, you know what? You can go to the website, and all your dreams can come true. You can see how it works.
That's where I'll be.
That's right. Yeah,
for sure. And our website will be updated soon. So let me say this for the ones that are listening and they go to our website and they don't see this. We are in this process. Y'all are the first ones getting me talking about the direct to consumer. So, cool. You know, Maiden Voyage podcast about direct to consumer. So let me say this. If for some reason the website's not up to date, just give us a buzz. Our number's on there.
Mm-hmm.
Give us a buzz. As for me, I get this every once in a while, but they'll give you my number. In fact, I'm sure my cell phone number's floating around out there somewhere. But if I'm not in the office for some reason, they'll give you my number. Just ask for me, or they'll take it, and I'll call you back probably from my cell phone if I'm not in the office. But what I'm getting at is we can definitely service folks now, even though our website's not ready, 100% ready to go with this. But I wanted to make sure on this podcast, since I hooked up with you guys, that I wanted to go ahead and talk about that. I didn't want to wait until next month, really. But the cool part is, I always say this, if I'm too busy to talk to someone who's purchased my product or thinking about purchasing my product, I'm in the wrong business. So I'm available. You know, it may take me a little bit to get to you. I get a lot of phone calls, but I will call you or reach out to you. So don't get frustrated with me if you're listening and then you try to reach out. Just stay on me and I'll make sure that I get in touch with you.
Absolutely. Yeah, I've seen that a ton with Jared and I and Tom and Joe. Communicating with you, Kyle, you're extremely responsive, even to the point where I sent you a picture of the bow that I got, and I didn't have the brace height set right, and you texted me, you called me actually immediately to correct that, and it doesn't slap my arm as much anymore, so I do appreciate that.
Yeah, there you go.
He sent me a picture the first shot he took with a big old raspberry.
Yeah, right, it looks like I got like 15 mosquitoes bit the same spot.
Hey, Kyle, I just want to say thank you for everything. You guys and your team did an outstanding job with these bows. We're extremely happy with them, and we're excited to take on this new journey in the trad world. So, yes, thank you again.
Awesome. Well, thank you guys for having me, and you know, hey, we'll jump back on here again. I've enjoyed this. I get to do these every once in a while, but I've really enjoyed chatting with you guys. I feel like if we were at hunting camp somewhere, we'd probably be sitting around some kind of campfire and just probably be to the point like, guys, if we don't go to bed, we're not gonna
we might not get up.
Yeah.
well we may have to revisit that for a future date.
Yeah,
on a hunt, another podcast. Yes. We might have to try some of that and get all these new breeds together, because there's gonna be a few of us shooting them here this year and into the future, so maybe we can make something like that happen.
Yeah, absolutely.
That sounds cool.
Joe, you're in charge of that.
Okay. Well, thank y'all again.
On the spot. You don't have enough on your plate, so I'll add one more thing.
Yeah, exactly. Well, for everybody. I mean, everybody here has got way too much to handle, so let's just throw some more stuff on.
That's right.
It makes it way more fun.
Yep, that's
right. Yeah, that's right.
Everybody, thank you for listening in to the This is Hot Boga, sponsored by ASAT Camo, sponsored by New Breed Archery. We're so thankful to have Kyle with us today. And, Kyle, thank you so much.
Thanks, Kyle.